Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boileau, co-host at Epis Radio with the implacable Nazarita Goldhammer, co-host at Epis Radio. Today's show is still in the Critical Design series, and we're going to continue the discussion that we started last time regarding the examination of our values and the relationship of our values to the ontologies that we create. What is all that? Well, an ontology is a world structure. It's just a world structure, so we create worlds. Now, when we grew up, most of us, almost all of us, were taught that there was one world, one universe. It was somehow out there, and we had to fit ourselves into it. We had to adapt to it. And that's a view that comes from the Western European Enlightenment. And in intellectual circles, I don't know of anybody who believes that anymore. And then when you start taking a look at some of the implementations of critical theory and applied phenomenology, you start to see that, and even mathematics, set theory, you start to understand that we actually can create a world if we wanted to. And so we're gonna delve into that a little bit today. Welcome to Nazarita. Welcome to all of our listeners who faithfully are with us all the time. You know, there's been a group of you who have been with us from the beginning, and as more of you have learned about us, you've joined, you've listened, you've bought some of the books on Amazon. They're cheap. They really support the radio show. They support the Institute. We're not pocketing a lot of money. You know, all those proceeds, just like any kind of community radio, are used to continue to support its function. And our function is to have critical dialogue about our world and changes we might make. So we have religiously spent our time for 7 years showing up for this show. We're not paid for it in any way. There's no perk of any kind. We do it because we feel called to do it, because we feel like it's our responsibility and part of our contribution to a better humanity and better world. Critical design is a concept that suggests just this thing, just this axiom that we can create a world. Critical design weds or unifies the concept of design, and I mean designing communities, cultures, schools, governments, corporations, tract housing, houses, apartments, housing communities, interior design, exterior design, the design of our food production, our scientific production, our political production, our love production, everything that we do, we have a choice in designing, actually creating. And so an ontological structure means that commitment which sits at the bottom of the lake. And you see ripples on the lake or the pond. But the ontology is a commitment to a certain set of objects, relationships of various values that inform the way we live our lives. So those structures are built on basic values, you know, our visions of the good, our visions of the good life, our visions of a living world. And the vision of the world and the ontology that we created in the Western world, especially in the U.S. over the last 100 years, is one of competition, giving merit awards for individuals, to instrumentalize everything, including other people, to instrumentalize non-human sentient beings, to instrumentalize the world, to reify and commodify everything that is and assign it a value within an economic production system, as if that is the lion's share of who we are as human beings. Well, it's not. I mean, if you sit back and think about it for 5 minutes, any old person will realize that that is not all of who we are. We're many things. We're culture. We're science. We're philosophy, music. We're all the different sciences you know: astronomy, biology, physics, chemistry, all the human sciences. We're all the higher cultural pursuits. Think of Mozart. Chess, which is a higher cultural pursuit. Poetry, reading, thinking, writing books, producing radio shows. There are many things we are that have now a correlate in money and a correlate in economy, because that's what we've created. But there's no necessary correlate. That's just because we've created a world that says it's a correlate. So the Western world we've created in the U.S. is one that is obsessed with money. It's obsessed with profit. It's obsessed with valuing things as they have a place in the market. Commodification of everything that is has a value in a capitalist market. And so if you are indeed a person who wants to maximize your own money and the money of other people, well, you're living in the right era, because this is it. But if you do so, you're going to be missing out on so many other facets of being a human being, an interrelational human being, being able to love others and to love water and the earth and to love animals. You miss out on that, because if your capitalist commodity valuations lead the way, they suppress these other valuations. And they're, believe you me, they're insidious and they're nefarious. And we've been so indoctrinated into them that most people don't even understand how this works. We're extracting value from the earth. We're just taking everything we can from the earth. We're taking everything we can from animals. We're starting to take everything from people more than ever. And if you think about, just do a mental picture, that taking, the possessing, acquisitive, taking, extracting philosophy ends up supporting a self-structure. And it's a self-structure that creates a world. So those values create selves that create a world. So we're suggesting that we need to examine our values. That's what this segment is today and next time, to examine our values. Now, the definition of a value is that it is a thing, concept, an item, concept, an idea that supports a vision of the good. So lying at the very deepest part of this analysis is a notion of the good. Like, what does it mean to be a human being on this earth? So we're getting right down to the very basis. This is a conversation everybody should be having right now. I don't care if you're into dream analysis, or you're into cancer prevention, or veganism, or you're against animal slaughter, whatever you are. This is the ultimate question, the meaning question. Who are we? What is our origin of meaning? And what is our vision of the good? Here are a couple of concrete examples to help illustrate the point. Some people believe that the good, their vision of the good, is to use everything in the world, to take everything we possibly can and change it, perfect it, pound it into shape for our own pleasure. Housing has been this way, especially higher end housing. I have not heard of anybody talk yet about the absolute exploitation that rich folk engage in by importing all kinds of precious woods and all other kinds of substances to build their houses. Well, those woods have to come from somewhere. And as more and more people become affluent, or as affluence rises, they end up taking more. They feel like it's their God-given right. But this is a vision of the good, to perfect the world, to have a vision that you're going to take whatever is. And there's a creative, if you're a creative person, I want you to think about it as a thought experiment, but it's also an experiential experiment. Get a couple friends and get together 25 different items, call them resource items. Give yourselves 4 hours and see what you can create. You can use any tools you want. What can you create with those 25 items? I used to teach artists this little thinking experiment. Well, you can create all sorts of things by destroying those items. Okay, so yes, you're creative, but you're creative in a destructive way. Now, it's called perfectionism. And somehow human beings are anointed with this natural right to perfect the world, and everything else is of value only as a thing. Another vision of the world, we'll call it vision number two, is that it is not a vision of the good to perfect the world and to change the world and to destroy what is, but to respect what is, to enhance it, support it, to be creative in supporting it, to be constructively and productively creative. So we've made a distinction in the very nature of creativity, which most people don't do, by the way. But you have to. So we can use our creativity to read and study ecosystems, to become ecologists, to have more knowledge, so that we have a better understanding of how we can creatively support ecosystems and biospheres and all the living things within them. So those are two very different visions. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Nazarita Goldhammer. The question is, how do we go about creating a dialogue with others, a supportive, constructive dialogue, so that we can examine our deepest idea of the good, the good life, so we can examine together our deepest vision of the good life. So some people might say, well, let's use up everything on the planet Earth, and then we'll go somewhere else. That's an option if we're brainstorming. Let's use everything up on the Earth. Let's destroy it, and then when we've gotten our jollies from the Earth, let's go somewhere else. Another person might say, let's don't do that. Let's conserve what we have. Let's find better and better ways to use what we have. You get the point. But the question is, how do we examine our values? How do our values come from our notion, our deep, deep notion of the good? And how can we not only examine our values, but how do we engage in a transvaluation of our values? Nazarita, welcome to the show. The floor is yours. Our listeners are looking forward to your thoughts.
Hi, thank you. Well, this is really an interesting topic today, because I was thinking, and we have proposed, that there are two types of thinking going on in the world today. The thinking that we are meant to be dominant, we control, and we're the best, and therefore everything else is subservient to humans. And then the other type of thinking, which is that we are interconnected, and we can't destroy something without destroying ourselves through that interconnectivity. And so what you're talking about is exactly that. Culture is shaping value. Some of the values we have today would not be values that we espoused earlier in history, if we could say that, right? So
yep.
our history is made by the dominant winner. History is not constructed through those that have lost, mostly. It is constructed by those that win and have a unique slant on how that is the best. And our language reflects that. Our language is a dual thinking. And we have to ask ourselves, are we truly dual thinking beings, or is that just a construct of our culture to say there's dominant and submissive, there's imperfection, there's perfection, there's earth, there's heaven, there's bad, there's good, there's us, there's them. That kind of thinking leads to metaphors that promote this cultural embedded thinking that humans are the dominant on the planet, and how to prove that. And so where does that lead? I always think, where does it go? And obviously where it goes is we are destroying the earth. That kind of thinking, that dualistic cultural thinking, is destroying the earth and leads to, you know, destruction. And the interconnected harmonic thought leads to preservation. It leads to creativity, to finding what is our interconnected place with all of life. And I know that there's two ways of thinking. I know there's two kinds of people. I see them every day in the world. And you and I have talked that there's a split in humanity. And I think I know that other people are thinking this too. As a matter of fact, I was just looking at a book, Jeremy Lent, and on pattern thinking and how we've come to this split in humanity and how culture creates this value. And I was reminded in design, I worked at a place and I saw this house design that was undulating, mysterious, beautiful of organic materials. And I showed it to those colleagues that I worked with that were in design also. And here was their immediate response. Their immediate response was, yeah, that's really nice, but I would feel really uncomfortable in a place like that. I prefer that straight box. You know, I could never live there. I might like it, but I would never live there. And I was perplexed. And perplexed by this thinking that we have put ourselves into little boxes. And when we see an avenue of freedom and creativity, very rarely do we want to take that road. We don't want to pursue that. We want to stay in boxes because that is more comfortable. It's what we're used to. And I see that maybe as the bridge, the fear of change, the fear of the unknown, the fear of changing the whole structure of our culture, which is really what we're doing in design. Design changes culture. It changes thinking. This harmonious, interconnected thinking changes culture. Take, for instance, the fires in California. Everyone says humans. There's a certain segment of the population that thinks humans did this. As we know, Trump says they have too many leaves, right? Just such a joke. But it eliminates the interconnectedness of nature, that, you know, humans didn't cause this. Nature was part of this interconnectivity. And so because we aren't a part of listening to what nature has to say, we're not understanding what's going on in the world. We think it's just up to us. And so that's part of what this triggers in me when you talk. There are two kinds of humans, two kinds of thinking, two obviously kinds of values, and that's where we are. And how do we bridge that? How do those who think interconnectivity and an interconnectedness with all life, how do we go about our lives producing change that helps? We can't change people who don't want to be helped. So how do we bridge that? We have to move on. You know, you can't spend your life trying to change people who don't want to change. But how do you work with your own interconnectivity with all life? How do you create new communities based on that?
Big questions. They raise the issues of, and thank you, by the way, for those thoughts. They're very much in line with my own thinking. But there's always been a struggle in human culture between the philosophical thinkers, you know, who really want to work things out in a good way, and people who are self-interested, who are thinking by fiat or thinking by power. So there's been a tension in both the West and the East, and between good ideas, philosophical thinking, and on the other hand, power. So let's just say that I'm part of a group of 1 million people on this planet who have some really good ideas about how to change up our cultures and our civilization. Say that. But let's say that there are billions of people who cannot be bothered or don't have the ability to think about it or who don't want change. Many people who are afraid sometimes eschew change and new ideas. So this is what I've learned in my life, having been in many different thinking and intellectual and experiential and emotional and psychological groups, many, that if people, as you say, don't want to change or they don't want to think new thoughts, they won't. Well, let's just say, as a thinking experiment, that these 1 million people have a great idea. That they have a great idea for the next paradigm of human civilization. But they can't get the world to join the conversation. Now, there are a lot of political activists, and they can come up with all kinds of historical examples of how one man or 100 people could change the world. That's it's sometimes called the dog and the tail fallacy. It's just because it happens sometimes, just kind of sometimes that you win in Vegas, doesn't mean that if you go to Vegas, you'll win. And those events don't mean that we can change the world. And the reason I'm saying this, not because I'm cynical or pessimistic, but because I'm realistic. So going back to the thought experiment, I know lots of people with lots of great ideas. You and I have great ideas. Ezra, we have wonderful ideas. But implementing those ideas is a political problem, social, psychological. And if you can't get people to sit down in the peace pipe circle, the circle of wisdom, and to talk about things together in an interrelational forum, then... But we know, let's just say the million people have the crystal ball and they know that they're on to the next phase of humanity. The question is, what ought we do? Then it becomes a moral question. And, you know, I've thought my whole life about moral issues. I feel very strongly about thinking about moral issues. And I know how utterly difficult it can be to get people to do the right thing. So going back to our original postulate in our session today, if we have a world right now that has a worlding, that has a vision, a topography, an ontology, kind of a way of doing business with a sedimented value structure, how are we to change it? This is what my question is. I'm not smart enough to know the answer to that, but what I do see is that we are falling over the cliff in every way. Sure, there are pockets of joy. Sure, there are pockets of good people. You bet. Sure, there are pockets of brilliance. Sure. But as a whole, the human species is pushing closer and closer to extinction and taking a lot of other life forms with us. Okay, let's set that aside. Okay? Let's say that it's true, Nazarita, that the theories of evolution are accurate scientific understanding of how things work on the planet, and that every species presences, lives, and then becomes extinct. Let's just say that's true. It looks like that's true. Maybe with one exception, the microbes, possibly the rats. Let's say by and large everything that lives dies. And maybe right now, Nazarita, we're just people who are a little more sensitive are experiencing that. We're saying, oh my gosh, we're dying, we're destroying, we're living in total nihilism, total chaos. And we're living it. And that there's nothing we can do about it. We can, again, have pockets of brilliance, pockets of empathy, pockets of compassion, critical design, great programs for third world countries, blah, blah, blah. But that in the end, we are doomed to extinction. The question I have is, and it relates to values, how do we construct a moral system? How do we construct a moral system in case one or two? Case one, you have people who just absolutely aren't going to change. They're violent wackos. And case number two, doesn't matter what we do, we're going to become extinct. That's a kind of a nihilist conclusion. So what do you think? How do we teach young people about these things? Because there really are a lot of Pollyanna thinkers who believe we can change the world, redesign the world. We have these great ideals. But what if these other things are true?
Okay, so let's look at the interconnected way of thinking. So here are humans. And I think that we've constantly been taught that, let's put it in a different way. We have one life to live. This is it. This is all we have. Make the best of it. Do as much as you can. Live as fully as you can. I mean, we've heard this, right? This is the mantra of our age, is that we have to grab as much as we can because this is it. But here's a way of thinking that I think answers your question in maybe not a direct way, but in a different way. So we are all made up of the same components as the rest of mammals and everything on
right.
the earth. We're made up of those same components. So does that mean that we truly die? And does that mean that if we become extinct, that's the end? I'm pursuing something that I think is very interesting, that is at the heart of this dualistic thinking. The dualistic thinking says, what does it matter if I slaughter all the pigs in the world and eat them? What does it matter? Because this is my life, and I'm going to do whatever I want, and nobody's going to stop me because this is it. But if you really think about interconnectedness, and you think that we're all made up of the same molecules, atoms, components, and you think, why would you destroy something that is destroying you? Why would you not support life? Because in evolution, who knows where this will lead? And so it's a I think I'd
right.
like to pursue this a little more, like, where does that lead?
Well, let me jump in real quick and say it's true, we don't have the crystal ball. This is a fact. We don't know how things are going to go. We have predictive models by really super smart scientists who've got really good evidence about the way things are going. And I, as a whole, I trust science. Absolutely. They've got data that shows how we ended up in the ice age last time, the last time around, was high levels of carbon and methane. And now they're measuring and comparing what's going on right now. These people are not stupid people. And so what we have enough information to know what not to do. And so because we can't predict the future, but because we understand better and better what happened in the past, we have a lot of valuable information that we can use to change the course of the world. There's your optimism. We actually have information that can help us change our course. And I think that's very empowering. It's very constructive. It's very productive. And that means to get out of chaos, to get out of nihilism. And that leads us right back to the topic of today's show, is values and valuation. So nihilism is a complex subject, but one thing you ought to know is that nihilism means there are no intrinsic values. That's what that means. There are no intrinsic anchor values in your life or in your culture's life. That's nihilism. That's scary. The opposite of that is when we choose some deep values. So here's a vision. I could think to myself, I'm going to do everything I can do to promote healthy biospheres. And there are so many of them. They're regionally oriented in terms of geography. It is such an amazing, beautiful thing that we have different geographies with different regions and different kinds of biospheres. We know enough about them to make them really healthy. We also know enough to destroy them for other reasons. So I might say, I value life. I value conservation. I value other life forms, and I'm going to do everything I can to protect them. I value constructivity, productivity, anything that is life-related that enhances the strength of ecosystems on this planet Earth. I value the reduction of pollution and toxicity. You know, you could start building a list right there. I value. And all of those values taken together, again, you can play games with your friends. Get a pot of coffee, and you start writing down little stickers. I value this, I value that. And before long, you have 1,000 little pieces of paper that say what you value. And you could put all 1,000 on a board, and then you could synthesize them and say, this is our vision of the good. And you would find that different groups of people create different worlds. That's what we're getting at here. Those I value statements, worldings, they create different ontological structures of what is allowed to exist, what is not allowed to exist. That's what we're getting at. But every one of those taken together forms a circle, even a sphere. The sphere is your vision of the good. If you value taking and taking and taking and maximizing your income and killing animals to eat them, to exploit their skin and their fur and make them perform for you, to make them live in misery, if you value that, if you value competition and running over your neighbor just because you're a little bit smarter and a little bit stronger than him, if you value that kind of world, that's the world you're going to get. And we have some super smart mathematicians who are, they're global scientists, like Piketty from France, who laid out a massive volume, which I read a little bit of it every day, Capital in the 21st Century. It's a mathematical proof of how this notion of individual freedom, capitalism, commodification, competition leads to winners and losers. But that's no way to have a sustainable economy. That's no way to have a protected biosphere. Sure, there are a few people that float around and they look magnificent. They're like the winners in Vegas. and 99 out of 100 people are losers. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. It just means we have a system, destroys the many for the interests of the few. That seems crazy to me. Nazarita, that seems really, like, totally super irrational, like unintelligent. And yet that's our system. And we got idiotic people who promote various political parties and political initiatives that support competition. And they weave these false narratives about anybody being able to get ahead in America. That is false. That is just not true. There are people so saddled with disease and disability right from the womb, and extreme poverty and violence and lack of education and lack of good food. Do you think by age 14 they have a chance in hell? They do not. They do not. Maybe one in a million. So when you do a transvaluation of values, you have to build a vision of the whole, like the whole planet, and then its various biospheres based upon culture and geography. And then you have to build a dimensional science of what is. And then we layer on top of that the moral, social component of what we must do to live interrelationally. And then we have to figure out an economic system. What is the economic system of exchange that supports this vision? Well, we don't do it that way. We have this crazy system that falsely supports individualism, capitalism, competition, possession, domination, extraction, and we're living it. And you're right. Your recent statements about totally destroying everything—they're apt. And so here we are. We're falling over the cliff. If you can think of the image of a person falling over a cliff, it's not just that we're hanging on to any kind of rock or branch to prevent us from falling, jumping over the cliff. This is what I can't figure out, Nazarita. Maybe you can help explain it. We're actually jumping to our death. We have people, this is the death instinct, Thanatos. We have people running to their deaths for all sorts of crazy cultural reasons that somehow there's honor in destruction, honor in dying for. And there are watered-down versions of that. We have people, average everyday people, supporting tyrants and dictators and totalitarians and fascists with a lot of money who are engaging in destruction. We have a lot of poor people who are supporting them. We're saying, I'll be the first one to run over the cliff because I want to support that dictator. I love that dictator. And by running over the cliff, I can show my love for that dictator. What is going on here, Nazar? Why is our value system so hell-bent on destruction? What is that?
I think it all harkens back to the way that we feel disconnected from the rest of life, that we feel we are the only species who has language, who thinks, who is creative. We've put ourselves into a little box. And I think that we can trace it back. This is my thought. We were talking about death, to how we bury. As soon as we started putting people in boxes to protect the dead from the earth, instead of going back, as they say, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, instead of letting the earth and the nutrients of the body go back into the earth, we started saying, nope, we've got to put ourselves in boxes to protect ourselves from the rest of all life. We don't want to nourish all life. We want to protect what we are. And I think that we can start tracing things back like that. We can look at examples in history. I mean, there's examples of people being the interconnective. You can call them a myth, but they're an example of what it means to be interconnected. You know, people, Christians, Jesus, if you do unto the least of these, you do unto me. You know, Buddha, who sat and all the animals came and came around Buddha, snakes coiled up and sat around him, because there's an interconnectedness. It's like these are examples. Can we be interconnected? Can we realize that? And instead, we shut ourselves off from the rest of even other humans. We shut ourselves away. I think that you have, you've expressed a beautiful interconnectedness of life is important, all life. Interconnectedness with the crow that flies out here. Whatever I do is affecting that crow, and what that crow does is affecting me. What that little mouse does down the street, what that does in the earth, what I let grow instead of a lawn, that affects me. That affects everyone. It's the ripple effect that we want to shut ourselves away from and say, no, we're separate.
I watched a documentary once. I'd like to see it again, but it was a group of scientists who were archaeologically showing how all life forms on this earth right now came from a certain fish that had made land up in the Arctic. And the idea was this, that we're not different than any other. We all have a common heritage. That's mind-blowing. If you really think about it, that I have the same heritage as my dog or the robins that are out here in the yard. Same heritage. Come from the same tree trunk called life. So we're all the same. And we, another thing in that documentary showed how all animals have, you know, basically four limbs. Two to get around, at least two to get around, and two to do things with, including getting around. A head, eyes, ears. We're so similar. I am so similar to my dog. And yet people would have me believe that I'm different from my dog. That's crazy. We're all carbon-based. We all need oxygen. There are certain biochemical features of all living forms on this planet that are the same or related. And you would expect that, wouldn't you? We have a certain atmosphere. We live on the same planet, in the same solar system, in the same galaxy. You would assume that we're all the same. But we don't do that. Humans are so quick to say, well, you're different. Your skin's a little bit different color. You're different. You must be really different. But we're not. So next week we're going to get back to, we're going to keep talking about the system of the good and building a vision of the good. Some people call it the next phase, the potential of the ecozoic attainment. We can come up with all kinds of really interesting names, but let's talk about a transvaluation of values next time. I think this is, in a way, part of the core of our contribution, transvaluation of values, and how that automatically elicits discussion about meaning. Who are we? Now, we're completely out of time. Thank you, Nazarita, co-host at FS Radio, for being on the show. Thanks to me. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to the institutes that support us. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio. You can buy our books on Amazon.com. We'll see you next week. Take care.